Welcome to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. I'm Mike Papali, and I'm the president and founder of In a Heartbeat, a nonprofit organization with a mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. I went into sudden cardiac arrest at age 17 and have been living with heart disease for over a decade. This podcast will dissect the physical and emotional obstacles of living with heart disease and how to overcome them. I am inviting you to join me on my personal journey of living as a heart disease patient. The ultimate goal of this podcast is to help heart disease patients of all ages live a long and normal life. Welcome everyone to the next episode of A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. A Big Heart is powered by In a Heartbeat. In a Heartbeat is a nonprofit organization with the mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. This is done by donating AEDs, providing CPR and AED training, raising money for research projects, providing support to patients, and offering free ECGs to children, teens, and young adults. To learn more about In a Heartbeat, visit www.inaheartbeat.org. All right, everybody, welcome back to the next episode of A Big Heart. I'm really excited. We have a great interview, great guest this week, Mark Malikoff, who joins us from Canada. Mark is a sudden cardiac arrest survivor and was a very prominent athlete prior to his cardiac arrest. So his story is awesome to hear about how, you know, he learned of his cardiac arrest, learned how he had to make some adjustments in his life, and to the point where he is now. It's really great. I mean, I feel like in about 35 minutes, we covered his whole journey, and I learned personally so much from a bunch of the things that he said and a bunch of the things that he's been through. So I think it's a great interview. I think it's going to provide a lot of value to all our listeners. And without further ado, here he is, Mark Malikoff. All right, we now welcome on a very special guest, Mark Malikoff. Mark, thanks for taking the time to be here with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to join you, Mike.
Yeah, you know, you and I spoke the other day, and I learned a little more about your story, which is awesome. So I think we're just going to start there. Could you just tell our listeners your personal story with surviving sudden cardiac arrest?
Yeah, you bet. So I, back in April of 2017, I was playing in a charity hockey tournament, and I was 33 years old at the time. And I played Div 1 hockey at Michigan Tech. So go Huskies, and played there. And then was a former after that, you know, kind of my hockey career ended. I got into CrossFit pretty good. So competed there, going to regionals and stuff like that. So pretty active person, no heart history, no, you know, family heart history or anything like that. But yeah, I was playing in this charity hockey tournament, and I was going into the last period, and we were in the final game, and it was kind of crazy. I was just, you know, I was playing and, you know, started right about going on the ice, but I just wasn't feeling that well as far as lightheaded. Felt like my chest was pounding and I couldn't catch my breath. And like in hindsight, it was so obvious that there was like some really serious stuff going on, but I kind of had a sinus cold at the time. So I was just like, it's just sinus cold. Don't worry about it. And yeah, in hindsight, I played a whole period of hockey in ventricular tachycardia. And then even after the game was done, went back, I was walking back to the dressing room, and my parents actually just came in and watched the game, and I was talking to them. And even I was telling them, I was just like, yeah, I just sure wasn't feeling good on the ice and couldn't catch my breath. And then, so I was back in the room after, and I was texting my wife, she's a nurse. And I was even telling her just like, not feeling good, all the symptoms and stuff. And it was just funny. Like nobody even clicked like, hey, it might be more to it. And I got undressed like from out of my hockey gear. And I remember just sitting on the bench. And then I remember like putting my head in my hands and saying, I don't feel good. And then I remember like falling to the floor. And then I woke up in the hospital, and I had two of my friends, good friends that were in the room there. And, you know, they just see me keel over. So they, you know, wasn't sure what happened, if I just like passed out or whatever. So they put me in the recovery position. And then I guess I kind of started turning purple, and I was in ventricular fibrillation. And so then they like, it was go time. So, you know, thankfully they were trained in first aid. They ran and grabbed an AED, CPR, you know, did their whole thing and then went to the hospital. So yeah, so I came to in the hospital and I've had concussions before from playing hockey. And that was exactly what it felt like when I woke up was, I remember the very first time I had a concussion, you don't know where you are. You don't know when it is, but it's like, you kind of feel like you've been dreaming for a while and you wake up and then it was pretty scary the first time. And then the second time I had one, you just wake up, you're like, hey, I got a concussion, just breathe. It'll come back. Like just relax. So that's what happened here. I woke up in the hospital and I was like, okay, something happened. Just knowing like I got hit or something would have happened and I got this concussion. But then I realized I was in the hospital and my chest was just so sore. And I was just, it started to get like all of a sudden, like what the heck? And so I don't really remember this. And, but I guess that I had asked a whole bunch of times what happened and I was like, what happened? And they're like, and eventually got to the point where my mom was in there with me and my dad was with me and they were kind of just taking turns being in the room there and stuff. But they're like, why don't you tell me what happened? So I would just like start telling them this story. I was playing in this tournament and then this, and then that, and then go, and then when, and then it's like, then I had like a cardiac arrest or something like, yeah. And I would just be like, I was just like, that's crazy. Like I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And then it would be like goldfish memory. And I'd repeat it again and again. So they were actually pretty concerned with that. And then, you know, there was, so that's kind of what happened, but it was, you know, it was kind of crazy. A couple of things you learn from it and the things that I've told people and stuff, but at the hospital, they were actually pretty convinced that I didn't have a cardiac arrest. They're like, nah, I don't think that happened. I don't think the device actually shocked them. And one of my buddies, that the guy that got the AED, was at the hospital and goes, no, I seen him. He got shocked and stuff. And they were actually going to discharge me that night and they didn't even interrogate the AED or anything. And so they actually kind of threw a bit of pushing from my family. They were like, no, I think you should keep him overnight. So they actually kept me overnight and then just discharged me the next day. Cause they're like, they didn't see anything. Cause my heart was back to normal. Mm-hmm. After the shock and everything. So I went home and, you know, was kind of recovering. And then it wasn't for a couple days later when we actually found out that, hey, when you use an AED, it records the event. So my mom actually went to the hockey arena, got the AED. She brought it home. She ended up tracking down this like Philips USB thing. So we were doing this. This was Sunday night when I had my cardiac arrest. It was Thursday night in my parents' kitchen. We were interrogating this AED and all of a sudden I pull up the data and I'd look at it, not even, you know, having really any idea. And I'm just like, wow, that does not look good.
Yeah.
And so my wife being a nurse, I emailed it to her. She emailed it to some doctors. Next, you know, I'm getting a call like, you need to get to the hospital immediately. And it went from, you know, hey, this probably never happened. And them thinking it was just, you know, something like that, to all of a sudden like, oh, we got to look at this much more seriously. So yeah, and then I ended up getting down to Edmonton and spent like 2 weeks there. And they did all their tests and, you know, they did a cardiac MRI and the radiologist actually misdiagnosing scarring that was on my heart, which now we assume is from a previous case of an undiagnosed myocarditis. And so they're just like, nope, there's like really nothing wrong, but this happened. So they implanted a Boston Scientific SICD. And it was pretty much, you know, resume activity as tolerated. So I spent about 2 weeks in total in the hospital and left with an object implanted on me on my side and no answers as far as like what the heck happened or anything like that. And pretty big, that was the start, you know, that was just about 4 years ago. And that was a pretty big whirlwind. And, you know, it's been kind of a crazy time since then of working to get information and get answers and help spread awareness and stuff like that. So,
yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's crazy on so many levels. I mean, obviously anyone that survives cardiac arrest, a lot of things have to line up really, really well. And that thankfully did. But then like, you know, and we didn't even get into this the other day, the fact that they just sent you home and you left. So you basically left the hospital still not knowing if you went into cardiac arrest, which is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So being a charity hockey tournament, there was a lot of like guys having a good time and stuff like that, but nothing crazy. But it was actually, I kind of joked with people, like, I couldn't believe how many times they asked me what drugs I did.
Yeah.
Because they're like, what drugs do you do? I was like, none. They're like, yeah, right. Like, how many drugs did you do? And I was like, I've never done a drug in my life.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just like they couldn't. And that was the one thing I found too is that, you know, being kind of a younger person in shape, you know, you definitely fall outside of the curve of what they would normally see for heart stuff. So it wasn't actually till I started seeing more specialized people that it started getting taken more serious. And again, once they saw the interrogation from the AED, they were, it was very clear that something happened and let's try to get to the bottom of it. So.
Yeah. The same thing, actually, you know, when I had mine, they asked my parents that same question right away. They were like, is he known to be a drug user? Cause of the effects that it could have on your heart. Yeah. I guess my, you know, you're a big time athlete, you know, you're in shape, you're doing CrossFit, and then you find out you have something, you know, that affected your heart. You know, what was your reaction to that? Cause I mean, growing up and playing sports, you, like you said, you never even would have thought you had something wrong or something could happen to your heart. You know, what was that kind of like initial reaction like when you found out?
You know what? It was kind of mixed. Like at the very start, because they didn't find anything, it was kind of, it almost felt like this was just a once like lightning strike, like just like a random thing. It'll never happen again. I don't probably need this device, but I might as well just have it and stuff like that. I think that if I would have, if the MRI would have got read properly from the start, I think it probably would have helped to give more clarity on what's there. But I kind of just went back to like, I don't really actually remember what happened. So it was kind of like, well, it was crazy, but you know, there's nothing wrong with me. Cause it was just kind of, and then 6 months later I was playing hockey again. Cause they just said resume activity is tolerated. So I was playing hockey again and I was on the ice and all of a sudden I got the same feeling. I was just like, you know what? I'm not feeling good, lightheaded. I'm just going to skate off the ice. And then it was funny. I felt like I got a slap shot to the chest and I was looking around and I was like, who's the jerk that hit me with the puck? And then I realized that my device shocked me. And then all of a sudden I just, you know, I remember I got off the ice and you know, I felt fine actually after my shock and like I could have kept playing. I didn't, but I felt like I could have kept playing. But that was when all of a sudden it hit me that, okay, something's up. And then it almost like got real at that point. And then it was now all of a sudden things, it just like got, yeah, like I said, it got real. And that's when it was, you know, the mental side of it became more, because before it was kind of like, ah, freak thing, won't happen again. But now all of a sudden it's just like, almost like there's something wrong with me. And that's when all of a sudden and I didn't know what it was. Nobody knew what it was again, because they missed that. On the MRI, seeing the scarring. So it was, that was probably pretty when things started to become difficult.
Yeah. So at that point, you know, living with the ICD, so I think there's, for a lot of patients, there's this period of, you know, like fear of that happening, of a whole bunch of things with the ICD. So, you know, can you just talk kind of about your mindset, you know, since that point, you know, you got shocked and that obviously had a huge impact on your life. You know, how's your mentality been living with the ICD since then?
Yeah. You know what, I guess like first off was, so it's one of those newer ones, like an SICD. So it's actually like under kind of along the side of my ribs. And it's a little bit bigger than the one that's like up on your collarbone. But, and so that was kind of like, I'm a side sleeper. So I had to get used to not sleeping on that side. And I kind of explained to people, it feels like you got a, you're pinching like an iPhone against your body. Like that's what it kind of feels like. But you know, it actually was pretty quick recovery after getting it put in. Like it was 6 weeks later and I was golfing and doing stuff like that. So, but as far as like the shock, you know, I use the description of like, it felt like a slap shot to the chest, but it didn't actually like hurt. That's one thing that I do tell people. I use the example, like, you know, when you're, well, most people are, they do it when they're kids, but they'll grab like an electric fence. And if they're out like at a farm, something like that, they'll just touch the little electric fence and you get a bit of a zap, but it doesn't hurt after that. It's kind of just like, you feel it like zap. And then there's no lingering pain after. And that was how it felt like with my chest. Like my chest didn't hurt, or anything after it. It was actually kind of, you know, almost reassuring knowing that it works. And, you know, if there ever was an issue, like I was, you know, I was fortunate there that, you know, again, if something would have gone sideways, I was around people, I was in an area and stuff like that. But, you know, prior to that, like I used to do a lot of snowmobiling up in the mountains and stuff like that. And I can think of so many times where, holy smokes, if that would have happened in those areas, you know, it would have been a pretty tough scenario, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, like to your point where things have to line up, but you know what, now, like I'm used to it. I had a good someone described it in a good way where it's kind of like an airbag in a vehicle where, you know, you don't count on using your airbag, but if you're in an accident, you got it and it's there to protect you. I think that there's like a little bit of stigma maybe around it where some people are like, oh, you have to have that device. And, you know, I didn't really look at it that way. As far as, you know, hey, it's in there and it's obvious and you can see it if I'm at the beach or stuff like that. But, you know, I don't let it get me down. It's just part of life and, you know, hand that's been dealt kind of thing like that. And, you know, a lot of people have worse hands or more difficult hands that they're dealing with. And, you know, I think that kind of comes to the stuff of dealing with it after. At the time, there's definitely some frustrations and, you know, things like that and everything, but you know, I've just learned to live with it and it's, you know, hasn't become too obtrusive or anything like that. So.
Cool. And I know when we talked the other day, I just wanted to talk about like exercise for a second, because obviously you were training at a really high level and correct me if I'm wrong here. It seems like you know, playing hockey, CrossFit, and it seemed like at the point of that shock is when you really kind of were like, okay, maybe I have to kind of change my workout habits. So I'm curious kind of like how you've adjusted with that. Like, how have you gotten back into exercise? You know, maybe some of the stuff that you're doing to exercise to make yourself feel good.
Yeah, that's that was actually one of the biggest challenges I found, because I went from, like, when I would play rec league hockey, and I played on a team that was notorious for always being short guys, but I would just play the entire game. Like, it would just, I'd play defense and I would just, you know, I'd play the whole game, not come off the ice. And it was just, I looked at it as like, hey, I'll get a bunch of exercise tonight. It'll be good. And then, you know, again, it was resume activity as tolerated. So I kind of just kept doing my thing. And then when that happened, like when I got the shock from my SICD, they didn't know what it was, but they knew that it was activity related. And so they put me on like a big lockdown of an activity restriction just as a preventative measure. And so I was in to get my heart rate over 100 beats per minute. And so I was kind of like, well, like, what do you mean? They're like, well, you can kind of go for a walk. And that was actually like really difficult. And I, at the time, I was just like, okay, that's, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I didn't actually realize how much I enjoy just exercising and being active, and how much it helped with actually my mental, my state of mind, and even like my, you know, just positivity and stuff like that. So that was actually really challenging. And so since then, I pushed hard. I would really, you know, push the doctors and like, let's get tests and let's try to figure out what's going on. And eventually I got, after about a year and a half of that, they kind of had some assumptions as far as what was going on, but it looked like it was going to be outside of the realm of the Mazankowski. It's a really good heart institute in Alberta here in Edmonton, but it was outside of their realm. So I got referred to a clinic in Bordeaux in France, and I ended up having, it was epicardial scarring. And so I went there just over 2 years ago, and they performed an ablation and were able to ablate most of the scarring. And then they were, through that also process, they opened up being able to do more activity. So I still do have some restrictions. You know, I'm supposed to limit it to about 120 beats per minute. Really more just like aerobic based, so there's not a big adrenaline impact on my heart. So, you know, I haven't played really any hockey since that time there. Maybe I'll get back doing it eventually, but I got a trainer and actually started. And so there's the one CrossFit gym, there's some really great trainers there. And there's one guy in particular, Ernie. And so he's been doing the programming with it and stuff like that. And it's really been an interesting change in my mindset as far as kind of training to, you know, go smash a workout kind of thing, as more as like, no, I'm training for health and lifestyle and a little bit of almost like having to check the ego a bit as far as like, hey, you know what, my days of just, you know, pretty much running through walls doing workouts are behind me. But you know what? With what I've been doing and what's been putting together for me, it's like I can get a sweat going. I can be fit and active. And I've changed some of my goals as well. And then through that time period, kind of a couple things that have come up that's kind of funny. So there was me and my one buddy, we were kind of joking. We were down in Scottsdale. We took a golfing trip and then we were kind of joking about, we had put on a couple LBs and we're like, well, let's throw a couple bucks in a pot and let's have like a fat loss contest, make it interesting. The first year we did it, the pot was like $5,000. There were so many guys that wanted to get in. So we called it the Shredded Disaster Contest. And through that, it was really interesting. But the biggest thing that I learned through that, and it was kind of different from before, again, more eating and kind of doing exercise and stuff for body comp rather than performance, but diet is like such a big deal and such a big difference. So, you know, it really is like 90% of, you know, where it's at. So that was one thing that I think I was a little bit concerned about was, well, am I going to be able to, you know, stay trim and in decent shape and stuff. But that was a big thing that I learned is, you know, if you got the diet in check, it, that is, that's really what makes or breaks it. And now it's just training from a stance of, you know, being fit and healthy and stuff like that.
Definitely. You made the point too, which I love. And I feel like this is what I've kind of come to with it. Cause it's almost like you're prior when you're training, it's your training at like, from like a really competitive standpoint. Like I need to be better than every other hockey player that also is training right now. So I have the advantage when it comes time for us to compete. And now, and for me, that was basketball, right? I was like, I'm going to train and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to just train harder than the next guy. So when I go head to head against them, I'm better. And the mindset I think now is more like you train for yourself. It's more like about you rather than like about what everybody else is doing and how to keep you healthy personally, how you keep yourself. Cause exercise is obviously great physically for you, but it's great mentally too, right? Cause when you exercise, you feel good about yourself. You know, you're happy with how you look. Like there's a lot of things that come with that. But I think that was like the biggest change too, which you mentioned was like the competitive side of it versus now is just like, hey, I'm doing this because I need to feel good about myself and do what's right for me.
And a big thing, like I kind of mentioned about checking the ego, it was, you know, I had about a year and a half of doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And so when I started back, like again, and the trainer's great and he's really good. But when I started back, I kind of had to be like, I was bench pressing the bar you know, I just kind of had to be like, here's where I am.
Yeah.
Just do the work, be consistent. And the one thing that I found too is, you know, in the past, like, you know, you're kind of, I'd focus more kind of on some strength training and power and speed in the summer. And then you'd start ramping up the cardio, getting closer to the hockey season. And all you do is like a couple really hard cardio workouts, and next thing you know, you're feeling pretty good. Mm-hmm. And that you know, the slope of your you know, cardio getting back into shape is pretty steep, and so you can just kind of jump back into it a lot quicker. Whereas now I find to build that capacity because I can't push myself in the same way, it's much slower, but I am still making progress. And so mm-hmm. you know, I'm really glad. That was one thing actually that I really had a tough time finding was, you know, there's like cardio rehab programs for older, you know, people again. But when you kind of fit outside of that demographic, there's not much there. And even like I would ask some of the doctors, you know, what do you recommend? And it's, they're not like fitness experts, like they're health experts in their fields, but they're not like fitness experts. So they didn't really have much for answers with it as well too. So that was one thing that was actually pretty, pretty difficult on finding. But actually, yeah, like Ernie at it's VO2 Max is a gym in Grand Prairie, but he's like super knowledgeable, super smart, and he's been a great resource. And you know, again, he's been really awesome with that. So that's probably one thing is find, I would just say is like find a good trainer, but you know, find someone that's actually gonna, you know, put the time in to kind of think about or even research like, hey, what does beta blockers do to someone's performance, and understanding that if you're on medication, there's gonna be certain things, and you know, what are the goals, and, you know, assess it from there. And, you know, and it's different. Like I always kind of joke about that before is like, you know, for trainers and stuff, cause I spent a bunch of time in CrossFit, but anybody can design a workout that's going to make someone feel like they want to puke, but can you, you know, design a program and a system that's going to develop somebody, as well. And then when you have that, you know, type of stuff, but yeah, there was, the resources were pretty limited as far as kind of on the cardio rehab program. And, you know, so that was kind of a bit of a challenge. And then I think also too, is just, you know, I went about a year and a half of doing nothing. So when I started, and you become hypersensitive to any sort of like twinge or lightheadedness or anything. So when I started getting back to doing stuff, it was actually, there was a fair bit of anxiety of like working through as far as, okay, no, like this is normal, you know, kind of getting used to working through that. But that was actually a pretty big challenge as well. So,
yeah, that's so true. I'm going to switch kind of gears just a little bit. So I think, and you and I spoke about this the other day. I'm just curious, you know, your thoughts on, you know, you've done some therapy. And I think as like a society, not even just like a heart disease patient society, as like a society in general, we have this like stigma against therapy. Like we're embarrassed by it. We think it makes us weak, whatever it is. We just don't think we need it. And I've personally had those feelings when I was younger, and I've done some therapy and it's actually really helped. So I'm curious to hear kind of what made you take that step and what that experience has been for you.
Yeah. Like, great questions. And I agree. Like, I think that there's, you know, just like mental health in general, mm-hmm. I think that there can be, I think it's getting better. But there's definitely some stigma associated with it. And I think as also for males, I think that like, you know, it's kind of, you gotta tough it out and, you know, a bit of that attitude and stuff like that. But, right after I actually had my cardiac arrest, there is a fella, he's the father of a guy that I grew up with. And I knew that he was does therapy, like a counselor in therapy. And he also survived a cardiac arrest and heart attack while at a gym in town. And I was just like, man, I'm going to go see Rob. This just seems kind of crazy, you know, just kind of talk about it and stuff. So there was actually a really good connection there, which helped. And we could kind of relate. We shared stories, and it kind of helps to, I think, like normalize it at least a little bit, because someone else has gone through it. And then, yeah, the first kind of 6 months were, you know, it was almost kind of easy, I guess I'd say. But once I had that shock after, and then I realized like, okay, there's more to this than what I had originally anticipated. That's when I really, I think, had to kind of take stock as far as like, okay, I started feeling some pretty strong emotions. And so I remember bringing that up with Rob one time, and I was like, you know, I'm kind of feeling some pretty crazy emotions. And he's like, well, you've almost died before. So he's like, I think it's pretty normal to be feeling some emotions that you've never felt before. And, you know, some of the big things that, you know, I kind of took away, and I mentioned this the other day, but was, you know, when I came out of it, like when I had my cardiac arrest here in Alberta in Canada, they have a law that you can't drive for 6 months after you have it. And it was like, you know, I got a 3-year-old daughter and my wife was 6 months pregnant at the time. And so there was like, not driving was, you know, I find this shocking, but at times it was inconvenient not being able to drive. And I would find that certain times I'd be frustrated, but I would almost like be mad at myself. Like, no, like you get to not drive, you know, you're one of the lucky ones, you survive. And just almost force this feeling of gratitude, because I do try to look at things through a real positive lens all the time. But what it ended up doing was like, it ended up forcing and repressing these frustrations, feelings of frustration and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, that was one thing that I talked with Rob about, is he had a really good example of, he used the example of like at Dairy Queen, you can get a chocolate dip cone and they'll dip it twice. So they dip it once and then they dip it twice. But he used that example where you can have two emotions at the same time. Like you can be grateful that you're alive and you can also be frustrated. And when we talk through that and, you know, it really helped to understand and just to be like, you know, almost allow yourself to be like, hey, this sucks. Like there's times when it just sucks. It is what it is. But I'm also really grateful, you know, because not everyone has the same outcome and stuff like that. And even just being able to kind of process through that and giving some tools and giving some insight. And then really what I found too, is even if there, when I had the times when I was feeling frustrated, it was just like, feel it. Why am I feeling it? Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of just let it go. But if you like bottle it up, it reminds me of Seinfeld when they were like, you know, serenity now and then insanity later, you'll kind of pay for a later thing if you bottle it all up. But that was probably one of the biggest things. But, you know, I also got a coach that's part of like the Tony Robbins network and started working through a bunch of stuff with that as well too. And that's one thing these last couple of years I've had, you know, it really kind of spawned a tremendous amount of growth personally. And, you kind of think about the why, like, why does some of that stuff happen? And, you know, maybe you never know exactly, but I do know that the growth that I've had and incurred the last couple of years, I never would have had without that happening. So I kind of feel like I leaned into it and it wasn't just smooth sailing the whole way as far as the growth with it, but it really allowed me to take some good inward reflection. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm a better, you know, I'm a better husband, better dad, better business owner now, you know, as a result. Again, it hasn't been easy, but, you know, and that's part of like doing the therapy. And, you know, I've had some other friends that have gone through some pretty difficult times. And, you know, that's one thing I think I've learned too, is everybody deals with things differently. So it's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And so I don't try to tell them what to do. And I just share like, hey, you know what? I've done the therapy and I got a lot out of it. It's really helped to even just talk about it with someone that's trained to talk about it and has the tools to work through has been tremendously helpful. So
that's awesome. I love the simple statement that you can have two feelings at the same time. Cause I feel like you don't ever, like I never even thought about it like that, because like to your point before, I find myself still more so when I was younger, but getting very caught up in like, a survivor's guilt of like, I'm only allowed to feel happy because I survived.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily true. You know, you're allowed to feel other ways. Like you can feel grateful, but still be mad at the world because of what happened to you. And it's healthy to feel that way, right? Like it would be unhealthy to not have any sort of negative feelings towards what you went through.
I totally agree.
All right. So a couple last questions. First, and you might've touched on this previously a little bit, but if you could name one, the biggest physical obstacle that you've had to come over since your cardiac arrest, what would it be?
Yeah. You know what? Like I'd probably say something along the lines of, you know, kind of physical, because like my body is, you know, probably just dealing with like my body kind of is strong, mm-hmm. you know, and everything that's there. And it's like my ejection fraction's good and everything that's there. So like, but it's mostly, I think, been dealing with kind of the activity restriction and limitation and kind of how to still, you know, get a workout in, how to, you know, really deal with that. That's one thing that's been pretty tricky, and actually trickier than you kind of think it would be. As I think about it kind of in hindsight, it's just like, well, you just get a trainer, you just do this. Like, it's just, but it's kind of, you know, what you don't know. And that's probably, you know, from a standpoint, I think it kind of stems into, you know, there's the physical side and the mental side, but probably like getting back to feeling comfortable doing things as well too. Mm-hmm. That's been difficult. Again, like I just found I became hypersensitive, you know, anytime mm-hmm. I got up too fast, it's just like, oh, I'm lightheaded and I'm mm-hmm. checking my pulse and I'm just, what's going on? I'm kind of, you know, that side of it as well too. That's probably been the biggest challenge, is like feeling comfortable, kind of getting back, doing mm-hmm. things. And I think it gets better, you know, every day, every week, you're just making progress and getting better. But that's probably been one of the biggest challenges from a physical standpoint, is kind of getting back used to doing things mm-hmm. within, you know, kind of that suggested range.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then last question, I love this one. I think it's a tough one, but if you could give one piece of advice, you know, you say, you know, you meet somebody tomorrow that's just survived sudden cardiac arrest and they got to live the rest of their life, what's one piece of advice you would give that person?
Well, I'm going to do two.
And that's fair. One's quick. Yeah. More the better.
the first one's quick, and we already talked about it, but that double, you know, the two emotions at the same time, that was really breakthrough for me, and just, you know, understanding that. But then really I'd say is, you know, be an advocate for your health and mm-hmm. really understand what's going on. You know, that was one thing that if you look at, it was almost like a comedy of errors when you think about the stuff that took place from, you know, them not getting the AED to interrogate at the hospital, them assuming that nothing happened as a result of that, my MRI not getting diagnosed correctly, you know, I went for a couple of years not knowing what was going on simply because there was, you know, that MRI got missed. And so in that regard, you know, I think that if I wouldn't have, you know, pushed and really worked to find information, you know, I wouldn't have gone to France. I wouldn't have, I think what was probably going to happen is I was going to get loaded up with a bunch of medication and kind of just be like, well, just tolerate it kind of thing. And part of it too, is one, like getting the information if it's not really clear, but then the other side is getting educated just on how the heart works, you know, what is your kind of condition, what are you got? Because that was one of the most challenging things is, you know, you kind of can get this almost fear of the unknown. And so, you know, mine was a bit of unknown because I didn't know what was exactly the going on, but I would just say, you know, from my encouragement would just be to, you know, learn what's going on. And then from there, you know, once you identified what's going on, you know, you can start kind of connecting with other people that have gone through similar things. And then that's been really helpful as well too, you know, getting to connect with you, Mike, and yeah, build that side of it. Cause it's, you know, there's not a lot of people in my community, you know, at my kind of age and demographic and stuff that have gone through this experience, but on, you know, the bigger, you know, virtually connected world, there is quite a few people that have gone through it. So that can also help too, you know, to go through it. And like, I, you know, Rob, the therapist that I saw, he had been through a similar experience. So it really helped for me to ask him questions, you know, hey, how did you feel about this? Or what's your thoughts on that? And that really helped as well too, because again, all this stuff is so new and you're kind of trying to deal with it as it comes. And it can almost be overwhelming at times, but yeah, that's kind of what I'd say is really be, you know, again, different countries have different healthcare systems, so it might be a little bit different down in the States and stuff, but my experience here in Canada was like, I really had to be an advocate and push to get answers and push for it. So,
yeah, I mean, totally. I think no matter where you are, you have to advocate for yourself and I mean, really cliche statement, but knowledge is power, right? The more you know about your own health, the better you're able to take care of yourself. So that's great. So no, I really appreciate you coming on, Mark, and I'm glad we connected, and I know we're gonna stay in touch because I feel like, you know, we just had like a 30-minute conversation. And I like learned so much of, you know, like your personal journey, which is very similar to mine, to be completely honest. And you know, how you've dealt with different things that, you know, that I've had to deal with, and you know, like we, you know, I've been living with it for a little longer than you have, but like, I feel like I just learned so much from you and like everything that you've been through. So, I appreciate you coming on. I know we're going to keep in touch in the future. And, you know, I think this is very, very valuable for all our listeners. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks for the invite. I appreciate the podcast and everything you're doing, Mike. It's really awesome to see. So on behalf of everyone else too, I'd like to encourage you to keep up the good work and helping to spread awareness. It's awesome. So glad to be a part of it as well. So
awesome. Thanks, Mark. Thank you so much for listening to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. If you liked this episode, it would mean so much to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Like anything in life, the goal is to improve. Please provide any feedback you have, any topics you want to hear, or any guests that can provide value to our listeners. You can message us on Instagram at A Big Heart Podcast, or send us an email at mike@inaheartbeat.org. To learn more about In a Heartbeat and the programs we provide, please visit www.inaheartbeat.org. That is www.inaheartbeat.org.